Be seated. It's good to be here tonight. To feel the presence of the Lord. How many of you are glad to be here tonight? Wonder if you've made any new plans in the last few days to try to do anything for God. You know, winter seems like it just moved in. Didn't seem to be any fall. It's just right from summer to winter. And usually that really catches people off guard. Sometimes, even in the fall, the pretty weather goes right on up till the middle of December. I remember one year that we had our tent set up in Monroe, Louisiana. I believe we took down maybe on Christmas Eve or right about that time. And the weather was still pretty nice. And I remember the tent meeting over in Jeffersonville, Indiana. We went on pretty good there. The weather turned cold overnight. But anyway, it seems like it got here in a hurry when it did start. That, of course, means a lot more problems and a lot more expense. A lot of added expense for the heating at the school. But I asked the Lord to help me from year to year and from time to time to keep everything going. And I asked Him to give me grace to work it out to where I can have what we need. Makes it rough sometimes, but the Lord always helps me. And I feel sure that Brother Taylor feels the same way as far as what he has to do. I don't think he's complaining in that way. He didn't sound to be like he was. You know, it would be wonderful if people as a whole could get a hold of the things of God and get a vision and really get down to business in doing something for Christ. It'd just be wonderful. But I know that'll never be. That'll never be. The world stands a million years, that will never be. Rather than people being more diligent toward Christ and more concerned toward Christ, they will be more gullible and they will be more heathenistic. The longer the world stands, the more heathenistic people will become and the less concern they'll have about spiritual things. So I just trust that God will help me to continue on with what I'm doing. And try to do what I can and help me to kind of make up for the lack of those that don't want to carry on for Christ. Appreciate it if you could check and find out where Joey is. I don't know how you folks feel, but I want my children in church. You know, a lot of people, they don't care where their children are at. It makes little difference with them. As long as they can survive and get by and stay out of their hair, as the world says, they don't care where they're at, when they go home, when they leave home and when they come back, whether it's daylight or whether it's dark or whether it's 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever, they just don't care. And I mean, we've got some of them here at Bethlehem like that too, that lives right on the campground. They don't never know where the kids are. They don't care whether they're in church or not, as long as they're somewhere in the neighborhood. It makes a little difference because they ain't concerned about their future, their soul, their education, and nothing else. That's sad, but it's true. But I want my children in church. I want to know where they're at and I want to know what they're doing. I want to know whose home they're in or what they're doing over there, whether they've got any business there or not. And that's just the way I am. And I think every born-again child of God is the same way. Every born-again child of God is the same way. The nature of God is to know where His children are and to know what they're doing and to know their every thought. He wants to know their every thought. And He tells me as His son, "Son, I want you to think every thought exactly right." And if you aren't like that, then you are not born again. If you are not the kind of person that wants your children to think every thought right, you are not born again. Isn't that shocking? But that's the truth. You say that you're Christ-like. To be a Christian means to be Christ-like. I know there's a few people that maybe they haven't grown up in God enough to seriously consider. They're still babies themselves. But if you're not the kind of person that wants your children to think every thought right, you are not born again. You'll know where they're at and you'll know what they're doing. and you'll pray continually night and day that God will bring their hearts into a place to where their every thought is right with Him. You know, it looks like that you'd be like that just as a dad and a mother, just knowing what God had put you here for. Looks like you wouldn't have to be a Christian. But because of Lucifer or Satan, it takes Christ to overcome. Mothers in the day that we're living in, it's sad to say they're not really mothers. They're not even real ladies anymore. Very rare to find a lady. Very rare, even among religious people. And in the world, it's just zero. And among religious people, it's very rare to find one. Same way with a mother, to find a real mother. And it's getting the same way to find a real father. People are so interested in fame and popularity and so gullible for money and business and for human passions until the children are lost in the shuffle. As I say, winter is here. And Paul, in one place in the Bible, he spoke of a certain place. He said, I think I'll winter here. So then, being at Little Bethlehem, I think I'll winter here. And that is if the Lord don't send me somewhere else. But I do want to do something here as much as I can. I know that unless the Lord leads different, we won't winter here because already we're planning to go to Hawaii for a few weeks. If nothing happens, we'll probably be going over to Hawaii. And there's some other places that we might be going during the winter. But in general, we'll probably be wintering here at Little Bethlehem, trying to do what we can for the cause of Christ. And we can't do what we would like to do, but we can do what He will allow us to do. And if the Lord will be kind to us, that's what we intend to do. The Lord is blessing us. We're going to rearrange a few things, change about a few things, and try to be stronger in our outreach for souls than we've ever been before. It's always been our way to try to double up and win more souls each year. And it has not failed a year as of yet, but what we come up with a greater outreach throughout the world. And even this year, we're having a greater outreach throughout the world than we've ever had. And of course, that invites more problems. That invites a lot of complicated situations that we ordinarily wouldn't have to cope with. We could just kind of lounge back and take it easy and not worry about those things. But I know that if we're going to win souls, then we've got to be diligent. The Bible said the diligent soul shall be made fat. And the man that tilleth his ground, or he that tilleth his ground, he shall have plenty in the time of famine. So we're trying to harvest a field that is international and is worldwide. And I want to do what I can. I was just thinking a day or two ago, history tells us that in the year, in the month, about the 16th of April, and way back in about 1789, was it? Way back in history, that a man left his home in Virginia, started down to New York, started out to become a president, and I think I got the date wrong on that. No, it was the 16th of April. But anyway, he started out to be a president. He had already been a general for many years, had led the American army, had led them to victory, and decided to spend the rest of his life farming. And when he went home, he couldn't rest because they kept calling for him. They needed him, and the nation couldn't do without him. And eventually they called him back to his post of duty. This time, not as the commanding general, but as the president of the United States. That man's name was Washington, 18 instead of 17, I believe it was. But he served for 2 terms, over to about 96, and he was then, not as he was older than I am right now, he was then not ready to retire, and yet older than I am. I'm 55, and this coming year I'll be 56. And Washington took the presidency at 57 and served two terms and served his country well and established one of the most beautiful democracies or governments that the world has ever known, aside from God's own government, which was in Canaan. And even our government excels the Canaan government to the extent that the people forsook the ways of God. And I feel this way. I feel that I'd love to do something for God. I don't know how many of you would love to do something for God, but I would love to do something for God. And I'm planning to do something for God. If I can have your help, then I need it. And if you will stand with me, I feel like we can do something for God. I've got a lot of things I want to do, and I've got a lot of outreaches. But I need some help. I need some people that I can trust and people I can put confidence in. I believe it was from about 86 to 96, about 1800, that things was established to a degree that we can be thankful for. And yet we're losing that same democracy. We're losing that same liberty, that same freedom. We're losing it. If we don't do something to stand up for righteousness, we're not going to have a nation. Everything is going down the drain. The president can't handle it. The senators can't handle it. No one else can handle it except God. And it's going to take the Christian's prayers. Whereas if those that are called by my name, according to the Bible, those that are called by my name, if they'll humble themselves and if they'll seek God, he said, I'll hear from heaven and I'll heal the land. It's up to you and I to really do something, folks. If we don't do something, the country is going to get more corrupt and more corrupt. I pray, the Bible tells me when I pray, that I should pray diligently, honestly, sincerely for the leaders of our nation, kings, magistrates, and that I should honor them, that I should obey them, that I should conform to everything that they have established according to truth and according to righteousness, that the dignitaries is of God. So I want to do something for God. We have a little government here. It's a little form of government that is, to me, a real bright spot in the earth, one of the brightest I know of. We travel all over the different parts of the nations, and this is one of the brightest spots in the world. And I think that we've got some of the best people in the world. I know we've got people that they cause me problems. They cause themselves problems. There's people that trouble their own homes. But other than that, they're good people. I need some help. Not financial help. I need some help in prayer, in consistency, in concern, in the offices, at your post of duty. And if I have that help, I can do 10 times what I ordinarily could do. But as long as you are slothful about the Father's business, then that's just how long I'm going to have a greater burden. I'm going to have a greater load. Just as long as you're unconcerned, my load's going to be heavier. When Washington was president of the United States, he could only do what God allowed him to do, and that through the strength of those that strengthen him. Moses, though he was the greatest man that ever lived in his day, Never has been another man just like him except Jesus. But the Bible said the battle was only favorable to the Israelites so long as they held his hands up. And when they let his hands down, it didn't affect Moses with God, nor Moses' life with God, but it affected their liberty and it affected their blessings. Have you understood what I'm saying? Way back years ago, this thing was established as a nation. In establishing a nation, every man that was great and mighty and wealthy gave their honor, gave their finance, gave everything they had. They actually vowed their honor, their wealth, and everything that they owned, their lives. They put that out to the people and vowed to God and to the people those things to the extent that they were going to make this a great place and a great nation. And you know, there was no possible way that they could do that. There was no possible way that they could stand. That was impossible. They were just a little people. They couldn't possibly do that. But nevertheless, because they made an effort, God undertook and helped them. The Bible speaks of the ants. They're little people, as we say. But they band together and they work and they get the job done. Though they be little, and we liken them unto people, though they be little, yet they do the job because they coordinate and work together. And that's what we need right here. If people would coordinate and work together, it would be like the lepers that sat at the gates. Though they had leprosy and was dying, no cure, no help. They couldn't go back into the city because there was a famine and starvation prevailed. And they couldn't go out front to any degree because the enemy was encamped just a short ways off. And they sat there and they were dying. And one said to another, said, "Why sit we here until we die? If we go into the city, there's death. If we sit here, there is death. If we go forward, there is death. Whatever it is, there is death." But they said, "Let us take the chance and go forward." So they raised themselves up by faith when there was no hope. And God so admired their effort of faith until he made it sound like a herd of horses coming across the plains as those men walked. And it scared the enemy so bad that they all fled from the camp and left their food and their wealth and everything. Whereas the great prophet of God had prophesied that by a certain time the following day that there would be a great revival in the city, that there would be bread to spare and people would have plenty to eat. And by the faith of a few helpless people, God fed the entire city, defeated an army, all by faith, just by faith. You know, we say, "Brother Pike," or we say, "Lord, I would do something, but I'm so sick, Lord. I don't have the strength, Lord. I didn't get enough sleep last night. I just don't have the initiative, God. Lord, I'm so weak. I've got the headache. I've got all kind of problems, Lord. I don't have enough money. I've just got to struggle to get by, Lord." Though the little widow gave her living, and God blessed her. And the little boy gave his lunch, and God multiplied it and fed the multitude. But see, we're a people of excuse, filled with excuses. People, hundreds and thousands of people died in the dark age, gave their lives to bring victory. And all down through the years, God has used the poor, sick one, or use the one that couldn't help themselves. Or God has used somebody that really couldn't do it. I think of Oral Roberts, a great, notable person, probably one of the most outstanding people in the world. And though I openly state I do not agree with his way of doing things, there has been a time in his life when he really was devoted to God. And the man, a stuttering, stammering TB patient spitting up his lungs, rose up by faith. And God has left such a mark in the land that no one, as far as I can tell, as long as this world stands, no one will ever be able to equal it, let alone outdo it. See, all because he utilized his faith in God. The Bible speaks of a city being closed in, the enemy having surrounded it. No one could go out the gates, and sure death prevailed. But one little woman, by faith, got her a stone, climbed up on the wall, and caught the leading general or the leader close to the wall and dropped it on his head and killed him and caused the whole army to flee and won the battle. It records where one man went out to battle and he saw the enemy closing in, a great army. But by faith, when he saw it, he took courage and he said, in essence, that the battle is not to the strong and the race is not to the swift. The battle is the Lord's. And he said to the armor bearer, he said, let us fight. And one man defeated an entire army. Samson, with the jawbone of an ass, slew 1,000 men. Another man, the Bible records it where he took a gourd, ox gourd, and killed 700 men, I believe it was, in battle. See, so it is always by faith. By faith in God, you can do anything. You don't have to be a man, you can be a woman and do it. You can be a child. The Bible records it by faith. One little child went to the throne. As he was directed, a little child. They range from 7 to 12 years old, some of them. And they completely brought things back to order, overthrew the alien armies, and sat upon the throne as a great person, a king or ruler. All by faith, faith in their little hearts, because they had been taught faith. You know, and this is the thing I suppose that bothers me the most, is whereas the Bible tells us that we are inexcusable, all we ever do is make excuses. We say, Brother Pike, I know I'm backslid. Brother Pike, I know I ain't doing right. But you know, what good is that to God for you to come and tell me that you ain't doing right or you know that you're not doing right? Did you know that's just the greater testimony against you? Because when you do that, don't you know that brings the wrath of God on you? In that you know and you say that you're not doing it, you're openly confessing it. And you say, Brother Pike, I'm just not the kind of person I ought to be. I just am not doing what I know I ought to do. Don't you know that that's foolish in the sight of God? For you to know what to do and you are a grown-up person, and you know the will of God and you know the desire of God and you know what God requires, and then you're not doing it. Don't you know that's foolishness in the sight of God? Don't you know that brings the fire of God upon you? There is no such thing as telling God that you know that you're not doing right and you know that you've been hypocriting around. You know, there's no such thing as telling God that and getting by with it. There ain't no such thing. There's no such thing as saying, Lord, I know I shouldn't watch this on television, but Lord, I'm doing it. I shouldn't read this in the newspaper, and I shouldn't read this in magazines. Lord, I'm sorry. I knew that I shouldn't have done it, but I just done it, Lord. I know you're merciful. Somebody would say, well, Brother Pike, I've done that, and then I called on God, and I could tell that His Spirit was still with me. Yeah, that's true, because you repented, and we're in the day of grace. But do you actually believe in your heart that God laid that thing aside and you're not going to reap it? As sure as you live, everything that you've done, every transgression is written down. And though you repented, and though God forgave you, you still got to reap that. You're in trouble because of that. Everything you ever done, you're not even going to get by with one thing, not one thing. The Bible said, seeing that the angels who are greater in power and might received a just recompense of reward for every transgression. He said, how do you expect to get by? How do you expect to get by the judgment? You're going to reap it. Everything that you ever said about anybody, everything you ever thought about anybody. The Bible said, bring every thought into subjection to the obedience of Christ and cast down imagination and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. Whatever the knowledge of God says, the Bible tells us many things, and whatever the knowledge of God says, God said, you get rid of any kind of thought, let alone deed. Any kind of thought that's contrary to it. So I said that to say this. Folks, we can conquer. We are a little people at Bethlehem. But we can conquer. I could have had great, like herds of people at Bethlehem. Would have been so easy. The whole city practically, when I come here, wanted to be fellows with me. From the bankers right on. But I didn't desire that. And we didn't invite the evils of the city to come out and open house. We didn't give that to people to run over the church half nude. We didn't try to have parties and singings and revivals and advertising all the time to fill the church up. It hasn't been my desire. It has been my desire to get together a little people, or a people that would be honorable, that would be godly, that would be holy, that would be pure, that would be steadfast and unmovable, abounding in the things of God, and be real, genuine saints of God, and bring about a form of government in their hearts and in their lives. And through that, and through those people, evangelize the world, and then bring in the harvest of the entirety of mankind. And it's going to do it. So then we have had to get rid of some people by preaching the gospel. The wicked cannot sit in the congregation of the righteous. And we've had to get rid of some people by preaching the gospel. That is to be able to bring this thing about. And even now, there are still people among us that's given to heresy and that's given to worldliness. But they're not part of us. All that came out of Israel was not Israel. But in Isaac shall the seed be called. That is in the son of faith. The one that has faith in the Bible, he will do what the Bible says. The child is known as a believer by his doings of that in which he believes. So, in doing that, to get sin out of the camp and get sin out from among us, we can unite, we can become confederate in the things of God, and we can do great and mighty things for Christ. Just a few, because even though we've gotten rid of many people that were just stragglers, troublemakers, yet among us there's still many that's with us but not of us. They're spots and blemishes in our feast of charity. Wells without water. Waves, raging waves that's foaming out their own shame. Wandering stars. And the Bible said the mist of darkness is reserved for them forever. So, by that, I can say that we still have a people. We've got a few people, and they're unifying themselves in spirit and in mind. And more, they're coming together because they see the need. And occasionally, I get to talk to one of them over here, one of them over yonder. Just here and there, I'll get to talk with one of them individually. And they definitely are coming together as one mind and one accord. One desire. There's not very many of them, but they're doing it. So, by this, I want to say again that I want to do something for God. I need people to hold up my hand. I need people to work with me. I don't need you to hold up my hand as a people. I don't need that. I need a godly people to hold up my hand. I need righteous people. holy people, clean, upright people, to hold up my hand and to work with me. And this we're trying to do, and that is to do more for Christ and reach the world. We're not planning to minimize things or to cut down on what we're doing. We're not planning to do that. We're planning to go forward even in a greater way and do something for God in a greater way. And I believe that we can. I believe that we will. And I believe that we can do it without you or with you. That's my conviction. I was like I was telling David today, he and I was talking about the things of God. I said, David, it's just my way of thinking and my way of believing that there is not anything in the entire world or that God hath that I cannot obtain unto or have if I want it. I said, my convictions is I can have it. And I believe that. So whether I do it with you or do it without you, I can and will do it by his help. But the thing is, I need you. Jesus could do it with or without the people. It made little difference. But he needed those people. He needed them to do what he wanted to do to the extent that he worked with people. See, I can do it with you or without you. It doesn't matter. But the only thing is, we are ministering to people. And God is trying to reach people. Therefore, people are involved in God's plan. So it is our desire and God's desire to work with people and have people to stand with us. And those that have helped me here, just in the frontier evangelism of what has been accomplished in this place right here in the last few years, those people are commendable. And God will bless those people. He has blessed them. People may help me now, but that's not like the ones that blazed the trail when it was hard and rough. And it's the same way in world evangelism as frontier evangelism. You may help later after a trail is blazed, but God will never bless you like he blesses the others. Nor will you ever be in the hall of fame as it is with those that were frontiersmen that helped blaze the trail before the wife and the children and the others came along. It takes real godly frontiersmen. We've had people here that was here during that time, but they were not much help. A lot of them were just a burden, really, to the extent that God had to take care of them, provide for them, and they were afraid. They didn't have the courage to step out, really put their hands to the plow. They were always looking back into Egypt. And they really didn't have the strength that was needed for frontier evangelism. But God carried them on the wing and hoped us to tolerate while he tolerated us. But there are men and women that are among us, a few of them, that were strong and courageous that helped us to found this place. And they worked hard toward it. And they yielded up their substance. And they were in here with us in prayer and effort, fasting and praying and trying to do something for God. You know, it's like this. If we don't do something, the Lord will get weary with us. Not that God gets weary, but rather weary with people. We cannot weary God so far as making God weary. But the weariness is that God just gets tired of our foolishness. You know, it's like a woman that came to our house yesterday. I believe it was yesterday. She was talking to my wife. And she made a statement that she was tired of trying to work with her husband. She said, it appears that he isn't going to do anything, that he isn't going to provide for a wife or children, and that he isn't going to do anything. Whether he is offered work or whatever, he just isn't going to do it. And she said she was just downright tired of it, and she was considering getting a divorce. That is to say that there does come a time when God will grow weary and grow tired of our doings. And though he will work with the tree, he will dig around the tree, he will let the preacher dig around the tree. But after a while, if he keeps coming and keeps coming, and we say, I know that I'm a hypocrite, and I know that I ain't done right, and I know, Brother Pike, you know, I know, but I ain't doing. And after a while, the Lord says to the preacher, cut it down. Now, a lot of folks don't believe that the preacher has a right to plant and pluck up. But he does. The Bible says that he does. Whoever he blesses will be blessed, and whoever he curses will be cursed. And whatever tree he plants, to the extent that whosoever sins he remits shall be remitted, that tree shall be planted. And whosoever sins he retains shall be retained, to the extent that that tree shall be plucked up or cut down and die. There's a time to plant, there's a time to pluck up. The Bible said every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted shall be plucked up, which makes it evident that there are some plants that's growing. But the Bible said they're going to be plucked up, every one of them, that the heavenly Father didn't plant. He said, I'm going to pluck them up. And folks, we've just about got around to plucking up time. Just about got to it. So when we make our excuses that we're sick and we're weak and we don't have enough money and we can't do this and we can't do that, you know what it really spells? It spells that we don't have enough faith to do what God wants done. That's what it spells. He that faints in the day of adversity, his strength is small. It just plain means that we don't have the faith to put our foot forward and to take hold of the things of God and believe God for the needs. That's where the problem is. And I trust that God will help me to put forth my faith in God. I see great men, though I don't agree with some of the methods of them, I see great men like Osborne. Osborne is probably something under 70. Old Roberts, I guess Old Roberts is around 70. The president, 70 or 73. And I see men like Armstrong, 90, I believe he's 93. And I see other men, 70 and 80. And I see men, 60 and 65, still going strong in leadership, in the government, and in the things of God. And then I see others, 35 years old. Some 25 years old, slothful, complaining. They're slothful in everything that they try to do. Complaining, fault-finding, got all kind of grunts and aches and groans and pains. He said, well, Brother Pike, don't you believe they're really sick? I sure do. The Bible said, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but God delivereth him out of them all. And the Bible said that if you don't honor God and you don't obey God, and you don't do the things that please God, that he will make your sickness of a long continuance. What we need to do is to talk to God and find out our shortcomings and find out our sins. Not because the husband has told the wife that she's ugly or the wife has told the husband that he's ugly. That is, it doesn't matter what the wife thinks about the husband. God doesn't care about that. He doesn't care what the husband thinks about the wife, only in the sense if their accusations are valid. But otherwise, he doesn't care. They can grumble, they can complain, they can scream, they can holler, they can accuse. He doesn't care about that. But you know, when there's a just complaint, the Bible said, when they say all manner of evil against you falsely for my name's sake, then be exceedingly glad, leap for joy, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets before you. Even when they cast your name out as evil, if it's false. So you don't have to worry, and God will move your sickness, and God will move your problem, and God will take away all your wrongs. But otherwise, if we do wrong, then we're going to have problems, and more problems, and more problems. And I know that there is a sickness, whereas the Bible speaks of it, of a person giving themselves to God and not sparing their body for the sake of Christ. But even at that, God delivereth him out of them all. So I feel like that we need to be a greater testimony for God. We need to do more for God. We need to get down to business with God. If you're afflicted, the Bible says, let him that is afflicted mourn. Let him mourn. If he's afflicted, if something's wrong with him, let him pray. Let him mourn until he gets the thing straight, till he gets in touch with God, till he gets everything straightened out. Folks, you're going to pay for everything you do. Everything you do. There's some younger men and younger women that just plays around. They don't have any real conviction. They're just neither here nor there. They're half-hearted in what they do for God. And a little bit of this on the side and a little bit of that on the side, to gossip, to think, to do, to say, to go, to be. Whatever. But you got it to pay for. And the Bible said, remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth. That is, straighten out your life in the days of your youth. Get your life straightened out. He said, before the evil days come. That is the days when you're going to reap everything that you're doing. Get your life straightened out. Get your spirit straightened out. Get your mind straightened out. As the world says, get your head straight. Get it straight before you start reaping. Because you're going to reap all those seeds that you're planting. While you're young, you're doing the planting. When you get old, you're going to do the reaping. And you know what? This is one reason why that more people don't do any more for God than they do. They have sowed so many wild oats. They have done so evil, so wicked. They've been so careless. They've been so unconcerned. They've been so gullible for worldly goods during the time of their youth, until when they get old enough to really start reaping a harvest for God, they can't reap nothing, because it's one up and down and then another up and down. And in and out, that is, there's one problem and another problem and another problem. And everything they start to do, they run headlong into the devil, and they can't bring forth any fruits to perfection. That is, they never, during their entire life, present any perfect fruits. All of the fruits they bring, they're dwarfed, or they're spotted, or they're specked up, or they got wormholes, or something's wrong to them, and they never bring those big, beautiful, well-grown fruits that are beautiful and luscious. They never bring any like that. I hope God will help me. You know, I want to bring forth, the Bible said 30, 60, 100. I'd love to bring forth 100. I hope he'll help me to bring forth 100. And in bringing forth 100, I hope that he'll help me to bring forth that beautiful fruit of perfection. I don't want to have a half-hearted effort toward God. I was telling Chuck today, I was looking at something and it was all out of sauce. And I said, Chuck, what do you think? He said, well, I'm afraid, Brother Pike, it's like it's always been. That I'm afraid it's one of those things. I said, yep, the halt, the lame, the blind, whatever you can't use, whatever's no good to you, whatever you've worn out, whether it's your life or whatever, that's what you bring. Your leftovers, whether it's your efforts or whatever. And Chuck said, that's the way it is. But folks, we need to do something for God. We need to get away from those things. I exhort you this way every time that I come to service, I talk with you. Not like this, because sometimes I preach at you and holler at you. But so many times I just talk with you. The Lord impresses me to talk with you, to get you to listen. You know, when you preach at people, people get miffed. Preaching brings out devils and demons. I can start preaching up here, and it won't be long before devils and demons will just pop up like that. But if I talk with you and Brother Taylor plays the music, you know, it makes a difference. And if he doesn't play the music, I've talked with you, it still makes a difference because I'm talking to you. But when he plays the music and I talk to you, you know, you listen. It's not repulsive to you because I'm just talking to you. That's why Jesus so many times didn't preach to them. He just talked with them. But folks, it's dangerous when a preacher talks with you. Did you know that? When he preaches, it's a little bit different because when he's preaching, he's trying to win souls. And he's cutting and he's popping the whip. And the Lord will let you by with a lot of things. But when a preacher talks with you and the congregation is attentive, then that means they learn a lot of things and they listen. And that means God requires a lot of things. He requires a lot of things. To them that know to do good and do it not, it is a sin. And the soul that sinneth shall surely die. So then, because we are ignorant, it doesn't mean that we get by with our wrongs. You might say, well, you know, Brother Pike, and I don't know, and God won't bother me. And some folks stay out of church so they won't know more. But the Bible said that servant that is ignorant, that man or woman that did not know to do the Lord's will, he said, will I chasten them? He said, I will. They won't get by because they're ignorant. He said, I'll chasten them. But he said, I won't beat them with as many stripes, but I will put some stripes on them. But he said, that servant that knew to do his Lord's will, and he did not do it, and he committed things worthy of stripes, the Lord said, I'll beat him with many stripes, more stripes. He'll really be in trouble. So I said all those things just to say that we need to do something for the Lord. If you're not doing anything for the Lord, then you need to do something for the Lord. Let's sing a little chorus together, can we? Sweep over my soul, sweep over my soul, sweet Jesus, sweep over my soul. For my rest, it is complete while I sit at your feet. Oh, sweet Jesus, sweep over my soul. For we've anchored our souls in God's haven of rest, and we'll sail the wild sea no more. And though the tempest may sweep over the wild stormy deep, yet in Jesus' sight evermore. For we've anchored our souls in God's haven of rest, and we'll sail the wild sea no more. And though the tempest may sweep over the wild stormy deep, but in Jesus I am safe evermore. Down at the end of the way, down at the end of the world, even the thing in Nicaragua, pointing to it. Much could be said about that. And yet, what are we doing as people? Worse than ever, committing adultery, committing whoredom, making excuses that it's all right because. Souls sinking down into the deep depths of hell, lusting after one another, still gossiping, bickering, backbiting, gullible, wanting worldly gain, still looking for popularity, still wanting the preeminence, still fussing, still fighting, still exalting self, still looking in every direction except the direction of the Son of God and in the direction of holiness and righteousness and godliness and purity. Still under condemnation. Still under condemnation. Faith won't register. Doing wrong, knowing that we're doing wrong, continuing on, to the extent that our faith don't register. And then it doesn't bring us deliverance. It doesn't bring us healing. It doesn't bring us salvation. It doesn't bring us the things that we would like to have. We desire, we still don't have. Condemnation so much that we don't even ask, because we feel like He won't listen to us anyway. And if we ever work up the boldness to ask, then we ask amiss, to consume it on our own desire, our own lust, so that we'll have more and we can do it our way and we can do the thing that we want to do. Not doing anything. Though the king is calling for our service, yet the Gentiles would rather run and play, jog up and down the streets, kick the ball, holler and scream and dance, eat and drink, spend money, make money. The Bible said salvation is of the Jews. Esther knew what to do. She knew how to please the king. Isn't that right? The story of Esther says that when she went before the king, she had been fasting, she had been praying, and the Bible said she appeared so beautifully. God arrayed her with such beauty that the king couldn't deny her anything. Folks, let's don't let no one take our crown. Don't let anyone take your crown. God's got a crown for you, but don't let anybody take it. We make all kind of excuses for not working, for not having a mind to work. And therefore, because we're not about the Master's business, then we're in trouble. I was talking to the brethren the other day. Somebody said something about believing God. Going to have faith in God, and He wasn't going to do anything. I said, there is no such kind of faith that I know of. I said, brethren, there is no such faith where you don't do any work and you don't do anything and you believe God. I said, that's foolishness. Who ever heard of such foolishness? The Bible said, whatsoever that person doeth shall prosper, which means you've got to be doing something. You've got to be up and about the Father's business. Sometimes it's just to work on a natural job, laboring that you might have to give. If you don't labor, you're not going to have anything. Just leeching off of people, staying home and doing nothing, or saying that you're just seeking God when you're eating and drinking and visiting and going about wherever and whenever. Folks, that's not a mind to work. The Bible said they had a mind to work. That's why they built the walls back. That's foolishness. Don't ever get in a mind like that. Like a man told me, said he one time got in a mind to where he decided that he's just going to let his wife work. He said about 2 weeks of that, and said that he got enough of that. He said he didn't want no more of that. So don't you ever get in such a foolish condition. You do something. You need to be doing something with all of your heart, with all of your mind. Let's just bow our heads together, can we? I'm going to ask Brother Mike Bradley, if he will, to come up and dismiss us tonight. While you've got your heads bowed, I want you to search your heart. See if you're like Vashti. You know, I really believe, I believe this, and I thought about it when Brother Al was preaching. I really believe that Vashti was having herself a time with other men. I really do. Other men in the kingdom, I think, had caught her attention. And that she really didn't have no time for the king, because she had her eyes somewhere else. And I really believe that that's what caused the problem. She was having her own good time. And she had done got to be queen, and she had done got to be what she wanted to be. And she felt like that she could have her way and do what she wanted to. She was queen. But see, the thing that she overlooked, she was only queen by virtue of his office, by him being king and choosing her to be queen. By virtue of his office, she was queen. And when she denied him, she lost her queenship. Let us always remember that when God has blessed you, as to how he has blessed you, as through to or through whom he has blessed you, or in what way he has blessed you, or whatever contact you have, as through them, you have your place to live, you have your food to eat, you have your offices. It's like little Bethlehem. Men have founded this. Women have done without. That is, to the extent of the things they could have had. And men have done without, denied themselves of things. And you've entered into other men's labors. So you remember that everything that you've got is by virtue of somebody. And let us remember that. Let's just bow our heads together as our brother comes to pray.